WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
After 2 years on the job, Dr. Sharon Gaber was formally installed as UNC Charlotte's chancellor. She is the first woman to serve as chancellor of the university, and in this episode, she's speaking one-on-one with WBTV anchor Jamie Bowl. He's asking about how the university responded to the pandemic, successes on the job, and goals for the future.
People are beginning to say, this is our university. We need to go help support them.
This is WBTV's Good Question.
It is great to see you again.
Thank you.
When we talked back in September, right, we were in masks and the school year was just sort of in flux. How are you feeling about things right now when it comes to the pandemic, when it comes to learning?
Well, I think students are excited to be back on campus. I think learning is great, and we are going to continue through this semester and hopefully get through this and then continue to work on what does the endemic phase look like? How do we keep the campus safe and continue to move forward?
These are things you really can't prepare for, are they?
They're not something they train you for in graduate school.
No, that's not. Are you satisfied with the way you've gotten through it, you know, as a university?
Oh, I think we actually were one of the most successful in the UNC system and maybe nationally. And you probably know we won a national award for our response. I do think our wastewater research, which we started early on, and it was our faculty members who said, I think this is something we could try. I mean, first of all, that got us on the front page of the New York Times, and we got this national award for our response to the pandemic in the urban university category. And that was from the American Association of Colleges and State Colleges and Universities, ASCU. So we're excited about that. I think it was outside verification that we really did do a nice job.
It's how the CDC is doing things now. They're monitoring wastewater.
Right.
That's how we know where the virus is and that sorts of things. So yeah, to think about the work you guys have done here is truly incredible. Almost 2 years on the job already?
I know.
Has that sunk in yet?
It has gone by quickly, yes. It is, you know, there are times when people are still saying the new chancellor, and I'm like,
Not really.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to think about, I met a lot of people virtually or masked, and now I'm still meeting people face-to-face. So it's kind of an interesting position because I've met a lot of people. I've learned a lot about the campus and the community. And yet I still have this new moment where I meet somebody for the first time unmasked or in person. And it's like, oh,
you know. That's what you look like.
Right, exactly.
Give me a win. What's been a win that you can point to in the first 2 years?
Oh, I think we've got a ton of them. Yeah. So I'm going to point to increased research funding, increased philanthropy or external fundraising. I said this yesterday in an event. I mean, the win against Duke was a great football win.
Right.
Being invited into the American Athletic Conference is a great win. We created a new School of Professional Studies, a new Office of Corporate Engagement, the new cabinet-level Chief Diversity Officer. So I think we've had some great wins, and I think what we're talking about is taking all that we're doing and just continuing to elevate it.
Is there something when you got here you thought, you know, I should be able to get that moving, but it has been a struggle. It's taking me longer than I thought it would.
Not necessarily. Okay. I think that there are things, and you know, people talk about academic time versus real world time. I mean, we have processes here. We want to make sure we engage and communicate and get buy-in. So things, I think, in general at universities take a lot more communication as opposed to a corporate CEO who says, we're doing this, and I haven't checked with 20 different constituent groups. And what I know is if I don't check with them, the problem will be on the other side. I'd rather get buy-in and feedback. And I also know that having lots of ideas and, you know, at a university, everyone is smart. That's the beautiful thing. And everyone has a great opinion. So I'd rather gather that, get it, and then not have to worry on the backside. I'd say the other win is we put together a 10-year strategic plan.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
That's what I wanted to ask you more about that. Just putting something like that together. Explain to folks how difficult that is, how many voices you have to hear from just to even begin.
Oh, yeah. So we had I think it's something like a 26-person strategic planning committee. You start with sort of fundamentals. You get everybody involved. And then as we went along, I mean, it is an iterative process. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure students have input. Okay, 30,500 students. Faculty have input. Staff has input. Alumni, community mm-hmm. leaders, corporate leaders. I mean, we wanted it broadly embraced by our entire community.
I was going through some of the points that are on the website mm-hmm. that everybody can go read, you know, for
yes.
themselves. I just wanted to ask you about a few of those things,
sure.
if I could. One thing that really jumped out to me right away was one of the goals is to prepare students to thrive in a changing world. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it means a lot of different
yeah.
things, but I think what we know is, I mean, so many of our students have lived through a pandemic. They've also lived through racial and civil unrest. We have to help them be flexible and nimble with a broad range of issues that emerge and help understand what does that mean within a broad political, mm-hmm. economic, social construct. And I think that's part of what we've managed to do even in the past couple of years.
Technology is changing, obviously,
Absolutely.
Every minute too, you
yeah.
know, as well. Is it hard to stay relevant, to keep things up to date so that
yeah.
you're providing a workforce that the business community here needs?
Well, I think one of the beautiful things about UNC Charlotte is that we do have great connections with the work community, mm-hmm. with the corporate community. And so we take all of the connections we have with the corporate community, and then we're trying to connect with sort of the entrepreneur ecosystem also, because we know there are big companies, and then we know there are very small companies. And how do we nurture mm-hmm. both of those? So I think as a university, and you know, we've talked before, I've been at some other universities, some other mm-hmm. public research universities. We have a better set of connections with our external community to make sure there's feedback. You know, we're very fortunate this year, the mm-hmm. legislature said, this state needs more computer scientists, more data mm-hmm. analysts, more engineers, and gave us a very large appropriation to be able to expand those offerings, in part because they're hearing from the corporate community too. So we're excited about all of the input and feedback. And along the way, we'll keep looking at our degrees.
Yeah.
You know, I've already started talking to my team about, okay, what are we gonna need 5 years from now and 10
right.
years from now? And making sure that we're gonna be serving this region.
Are universities built, I'm talking about in general, to be nimble like that, to sort of shift on a dime when you need to?
Oh, I think it sort of gets back to the corporate time and university
yeah.
time. I mean, we're not particularly built that way, and yet I think that this campus has been much more nimble than many universities. So I mentioned we started this School of Professional Studies.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to be able to allow working adults who need to complete their degree. And it was put together and implemented within a year. That's rapid,
yeah.
and that was really good. Or our new Office of Corporate Engagement. That was something in my first few months here as I talked to business leaders around the community, and they said, you have this amazing asset there, but I don't even know who do I call to try to engage. If I want your students, or I want mm-hmm. to engage in research, or I want to talk to a faculty expert, or I want to give a gift, or you know, all
yeah.
of these things. Who do I call? There are, you know, 50 different people. So we've got a one-stop shop there. So we've tried to listen and respond in fast university time.
That's the thing, because does that require a mind shift for some folks who've obviously been in the system for a long time, that we have to think differently about how we approach these things?
Well, I think so, but I think I have felt that this team is excited, mm-hmm. and I mean our staff, our faculty, our, you know, any of the senior leadership. I mean, people are excited about enhancing our connections and being embraced really as this wonderful asset to the community. Mm-hmm. So everybody's on board saying, mm-hmm. yeah, let's do it. You know, we want people to recognize how wonderful we are.
And that kind of leads us right into one of the other goals I saw there was strengthen curricula to educate students to become resilient, self-confident, lifelong learners. I think sometimes people can think, I've got my degree, I'm moving on in life, here I go.
Right.
That's not the way it is. That's not what the business community needs, right?
That is correct. And I think that is what we're trying to teach our students currently, and even the School of Professional Studies that will offer ongoing training opportunities for companies. I mean, we know, I'll start with me, I know that when I went to school, computers were just being introduced, right?
Right, yeah.
So here we are now, some time period later, and everybody can use additional training, additional opportunities, additional ways of thinking about how are we motivating our employees during the Great Resignation?
Yeah.
How are we working with that and thinking broadly and thinking of ways to entice them to either come work with us or stay, right? So we have lots of opportunities for lifelong learning that we're excited to be able to share also.
And some of that to equip students to retain, so companies can retain them.
Right.
You know what I mean? You kind of touched on
it,
the Great Resignation, people bouncing around from career to career. Younger people do seem to move a little more than maybe we did as our generation. Is that part of the conversations that you're having? How can we support you to not only hire a good employee, but keep that good employee?
Well, that would be with some of the organizations. When I talk about the School of Professional Studies, they have trainings there. I know that our Belt College of Business offers, you know, some of that in their in the management program, and thinking about some of the graduates coming out and what they're learning. We've learned that coming through this pandemic, we need a different skill set, perhaps, for some of our graduates to go out and be able to help companies be able to hold on to top talent.
Obviously, one of the main focuses I know you're working on is becoming that top-tier research university. Why is that so important to you? Where do you stand right now, do you think?
Well, what I want to say is it is probably less important to me or to the university. It is important to our region. Mm-hmm. And here's why. A Research One university is the top research. It's the top tier research university. That's the top. And we know that currently in North Carolina, that is Duke University, that's North Carolina State, and that's UNC Chapel Hill. What happens when you have a research or a top-tier research university? Businesses want to come, they want to partner, they want to co-locate, they want to be nearby, they want the talent that comes from that university. We've had businesses come and say, we want to be here in Charlotte near the university because you are a research university. That is wonderful. But with even more research, you have entrepreneurs who want to come and work with students. You have other businesses that say, hey, I've been working with this university out of state.
Yeah.
Here's an opportunity. As we started looking into what does it take to be a top-tier research university and what does it mean to our community, we first of all saw the closest top-tier research university to Charlotte is the University of South Carolina in Columbia. So, okay, we know there are several here, though, in the state of North Carolina. But in the conversations, the feeling was Charlotte needs this to be able to have, first of all, federal research dollars coming in, opportunities to partner with corporations, opportunities for our researchers then to get those dollars and perhaps have spin-off companies that might come from their research or innovation. So it creates a broader ecosystem for our region, for business, for entrepreneurship, for innovation. And we all know we will have a new innovation district here. Certainly that's tied to, you know, the hospital system and the new medical school. But we are an important part of innovation in this region.
That's the important point, I think, so folks at home understand this part. This isn't just about the university and building a fancy lab somewhere. It is a job creator.
Yes.
You look at the research triangle, obviously, up in the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill area, creating thousands of different jobs, bringing in many different companies.
Well, and as you say that, for every dollar that comes in research, there's a multiplier that flows through your community. Mm-hmm. That dollar comes in and it is spent on goods and services in the community, which helps exponentially with job creation.
So to create that sort of environment, you obviously got to not only recruit, but retain top faculty talent researchers.
Absolutely.
Do you have what you need in your toolbox to do that?
Well, as we grow in research, then we will be recruiting more. I mean, there's a chicken and the egg. You don't say, here's this chunk of money and we're going to build that. What we're doing is sort of an incremental approach over a number of years. And we're excited about it. Mm-hmm. I think that what we've seen in the nearly 2 years that I've been here, each year we have increased in terms of our research funding. We have to continue along that plan.
So tier one is the goal. Do we have a timeline for that?
Well, our strategic plan is a 10-year plan. By our estimates, mm-hmm. it will be a 7 to 10-year venture. And really, I will tell you, that's why we did a 10-year plan. Because mm-hmm. if we did a 5-year plan, I've had plenty of people say, why don't you do a 5-year plan? If we did a 5-year plan, we wouldn't be able to have this big goal out there. We wanted it out there. We wanted people to mm-hmm. know this is where we're headed. But we want to be realistic, too.
That takes fundraising, right?
It does.
That takes,
it does.
Companies willing to invest in grants and those sorts of things.
Right.
Do you have the things in place to do that?
Well, we have been very fortunate and we've had great connections. We announced yesterday mm-hmm. Truist's gift of $5.3 million to the university. We have had other entities who have expressed interest in partnering with us over time. We will continue to do that. And you know, what my goal is to increase this mm-hmm. and be able to help our students, our faculty, our researchers, our staff, so that we are building.
As you're putting together a 10-year plan like this, there's ambition, right? And then there's
uh-huh.
realism.
Yeah.
Did you have to temper anything along the way, or do you think everything you've got in there is absolutely doable?
Oh, I think everything is doable. It's a matter of not everything is doable in year one, right? And I think what you have, whenever you lay out a list of aspirations and where you're headed, everybody says, well, okay, you know, we can do this in year one. And my comment is, and for everybody to take a look at the plan, you can't do everything in year one. And that's why we've mm-hmm. tried to lay it out over the 10-year period to be realistic and understand there's a ramp-up time. And by the way, we put it together during a pandemic.
Right,
so there's a little bit of let's get to normal and let's make that ramp up occur.
So you have to tell people, well, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, let's be patient,
well,
we can get there.
And in fact, I think with patience, we will get there because I get it. I'm the first person that wants everything. You know, you want everything to fall in place immediately, but I'm excited that the faculty view this as a wonderful opportunity for this university. And I have said mm-hmm. this university shouldn't be a best kept secret. And the reality is I feel as though it's less of a secret that people are beginning to say, look at that amazing university mm-hmm. with 30,500 students. We need to go help support them and embrace them and recognize this is our university. This is the urban public research university in the Charlotte metro area.
Let me ask you a little more about that. Is there still a disconnect? I think in the business community, they obviously know they're getting great students that mm-hmm. come to work for them from here. I think that part, it seems like that's known. But
yes.
The broader community, does the community still appreciate or understand what UNC Charlotte means to this area, do you think?
I think that there are a lot of people who haven't been out here recently or might have gone to school here in the 70s or 80s and might not have been back. And what we're getting are more and more people who are coming back saying, I drove around campus. I had no idea how much it had grown and what you have and the beautiful facilities. And I saw students everywhere, you know. So I would ask everybody to come drive around because it's been wonderful as people do that. And I'd say the other option is take the light rail. And, you know, I think before the light rail, there was this view that sort of the 8-mile gulf between uptown and campus was this mm-hmm. was this vast expanse that we couldn't bridge. And now what we know is it's a 20-minute ride and you can do it, right?
Right.
And our students love the light rail ends here on campus. They hop on and they go to their internship mm-hmm. in uptown and it's perfect. And we've got lots of students who say, I chose to go to school here because I'd have this set of opportunities in Charlotte.
At the end of the report, or of the strategic plan, are the metrics, right?
Yes.
The things that you can really quantify and say, we've met this goal. A couple of those I just wanted to ask you about. One of those is the six-year graduation rate. You want to go from 65 to 78% graduation rate within 6 years. How do you plan to achieve that? What are the hurdles that you have to clear to get there?
Yeah, we've got an entire committee that is working on that. And, you know, what does that mean? We have to have more student support. And we all know that it's really student services. It's what does advising look like? What do class offerings look like? Right now, we are going through the process of doing, we refer to it as a quality enhancement plan. They're looking at math. Math is one of those classes that we know lots of students stumble. Mm-hmm. So they've done an entire analysis of what are the classes that you get a D, an F, or a W in. Well, they're looking at those and then figuring out how do we help students in those. Is it more intrusive tutoring? Is it co-requisite? So they've got this amazing plan that's laid out. The math department is on board and saying, if we can help restructure some of these classes, the ultimate goal is that the students learn the material. So we want to be part of the solution. So it's exciting that with everything we're doing, it's what are the reasons that students don't succeed and how do we help them? One of the other reasons, finances. Mm-hmm. You know, can students afford to stay in school? Right. So we have helped as we could this year with some small scholarships and grants. That will be part of our fundraising effort to help student success. If a student gets a degree, we know that we're helping economic and social mobility in our community.
Absolutely. When you talk about maybe if it's math, for example, that some might be struggling in, is that an indictment on the high school preparation that's happening?
I don't know that I'm going there. Okay. Right. I think that what we know is, and right now, students just struggled learning at home too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think the reality is we're in a current state where there are a lot of confounding variables that have led students to struggle in certain classes, and it's our job to figure out how we sort through them, how we unknot that problem and resolve them to help them.
But is there a role for the university to make sure our high schools are preparing kids for the right way?
And the nice thing is that we have that set of connections, and we report information back so that they understand what's happening. And we do. If there's an issue with math, we'll share that information and be able to get back.
Well, I know you mentioned it. You mentioned the debt issues. Obviously, I mean, you want to bring down because it's hard to get out of school and be saddled with, you know, a $500 a month, you know, student loan payment, that sort of thing. So that's where you're talking about scholarships and grants and those kinds of things to help those students.
And because we're a relatively young university, I mean, we're only 75 years old, and you compare us to some of our peers in the UNC system that are 225 years old, our endowment's not quite where others are. We're going to have to build that so that we do have scholarship assistance for our students.
You want to improve the national ranking, I think 227 to 175.
Yes.
Is the goal. Is that tied into the research university? Is that tied to all these things that we're talking
about?
It's
all of the variables to be able to get there. And some of it is how do other schools. So in U.S. News and World Report's ranking, they ask presidents, provost, and directors of admission, how do you rank these other schools? Mm-hmm. What do you view them as? So we've started telling more of our story to those groups so that they can say, yeah, I'm familiar with them and they're doing a good job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
As you put all these things down, though, now there's metrics, now there's goals.
There are. I'm accountable,
I was just gonna ask you about that. Do you feel pressure with this?
Oh, sure there's pressure. There's expectations. And of course, I've led the effort to get to this. I want to be held accountable, and we've got to work on this. I would think anybody who comes in and says, here's what we're going to do, it's my responsibility to ensure that we are making progress. And again, we've got a time period, and it won't all be achieved in year one or year two, but we need to make substantial progress along the way.
Well, making yourself accessible to interviews like this certainly helps us all understand. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've appreciated it. Thank you.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media. From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bowl. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson. It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Huga Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.